Today, it's Edwin's Monday evening property rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today, I'm joined again by Edwin for our Monday evening rant. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin. I'm doing well. Then you're probably going to say, what the hell's with the shades, right?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, you've certainly got a big pair on there. I'm not quite sure what the purpose is.
Well, look, I tell you what it is, and I'll explain it to everybody. I'm just trying to protect myself from all these Jedi mind tricks that the building and pest reporters inspectors are putting out there on these building and pest reports. Yeah, where they don't seem to. It's all this fanciful wording, and they don't seem to disclose structural issues with buildings. And for some reason, they're telling the people that they can't access the subfloor area when there's the doors are even bigger than what you can get a 120 kilo inspector through.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, there's often those you don't want to see don't see, right?
Well, that's right. So exactly. And the selling agents and the vendors certainly don't want the buyers to see what the hell's wrong with the property, which is a major concern. Now, this is a concern that we're going to be talking about later on, because when people start finding out that they've got major issues, structural issues as well as structural issues to the timber frame in particular, and the joists and bearers and whatever else. They're going to have issues not only in terms of overpaying for a property and costs, but also one of the major topics that we're going to break on the program today, Martin, with regard to with what's happening with timber.
Yeah, and I was going to say, would you believe it?
Look, you better believe anything's possible. I mean, we thought everything was possible or impossible in 2020, but 2021's getting more and more exciting by the week and by the month, Martin. It's just it's going to be very interesting. We're going to raise a few issues. We're going to cut through a bit of the noise that came out in the mainstream media today and the facts behind the stories that the so-called property reporters are reporting on. But now have you probably realized that they're not detailing the actual address of the properties, because people like myself and others that are very astute, other followers that we have on our channel and on your channel and on Twitter, they're starting to become the wiser.
Absolutely, they certainly are. And I was very amused in your pre-show notes that you said the mainstream media continually dribble about achievement, right? I think it's drivel, but both could well be true.
Oh, well, drivel, some potatoes, tomatoes, whatever, man. You know, it's all going to get more expensive in days to come, whatever vegetable you fancy. You know, don't drivel too much, because, even spitting's going to cost you sooner than later.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, when they start charging for oxygen, you'll know that we've achieved this whole new world that people are aspiring to or not. But, yeah, it is really interesting insofar that, there's still a lot of noise around there, and there's a lot of stuff that really isn't telling half the truth. And just, let's just think about this. We know that there's stuff around responsible lending. We know that there's talk about APRA potentially tightening lending standards. We know that the Reserve Bank wants to keep rates low, but, of course, the bond rates are pushing in the other direction, and the speculation now that rates might rise. There's a lot of uncertainty out there.
Look, again, things are only getting more and more unpredictable because it's of how the many things that are playing out. As we said earlier on, we're going to be talking a little bit more later on with regards to what China's now doing with regard to the log imports of the timber exports, and obviously, we're not really processing a lot of the timber that we produce here in Australia. It's been processed overseas, like a thousand other products that we raw materials and products and exports that we send overseas to get processed, and then we buy back at 100%, 1,000% more than what they bought it from us. But this thing's going to play out, and it's going to have a huge effect on property, on where things are going. And the question's going to be is, you know, whether how the market is going to sustain this in relation to the people that bought land to build. Now that's there's a lot of uncertainty, and you know, let's break it up one topic at a time, perhaps, mate.
Yeah, good idea. Well, let's start with some of that general stuff. Your general chatter and the, you know, I guess the WeChat stuff is actually quite significant, isn't it?
Look, it is, and it's put us in the forefront of breaking topics and news related to how things are going to affect the property industry and how things are going to affect the economy on a broader scale. And I think it's because the reporting here in Australia has become so insulated and so focused on you know, Scotty from marketing or the lack of cojones that the Labor Party may have or may not have, and you know, it's just become so insulated and talking about issues that are really not having greater or major impact other than dealing with politicians' personalities and the like. Look, all that's good and fine, but what's going to really affect the sustainability of the lifestyles that we've led and the sustainability of our future generations should be of greater concern, and what's happening and what we're doing. Obviously, we don't have control over international factors in the broader scheme of things because we're a small nation. But one thing for sure is that in all this controversy that the governments and whether it be Labor, Liberal, or any other or any colour of flag that you may want to fly, it's the people are getting left behind. Responsible lending, there's a push for responsible lending to go out the door. There's a push for even lower rates, QE, you name it, we've got it. And at the end of the day, the cost of living is just getting more and more expensive. So it's there's so much going on. It's getting harder and harder week in, week out to just deal with life in general and the economy in general.
I agree. And, it does sound to me as though there are some people who have making a strategic decision to move out of share markets and into property at the moment, right? I guess on the principle.
That's right. That's one of the things that we have noticed with the chatter and things that bring clarity, a little bit of clarity to the turbulence out there. Now, we've seen and I've seen and I've spoken about in from what the discussions that our people that monitor the WeChat chatter and what we've seen on the ground and talking to the mortgage brokers that we deal with and the other professionals in different industries that are impacted or that we work closely with in the real estate side of things, we've seen that there's been a great shift of wealth from one asset class and now been put into another. And I'm talking with whether it be Bitcoin or any type of shares that they've done well out of that a lot of people don't feel so confident about the rises. I mean, there are people that remain, but a lot of the people, and when I say a lot of the people, it's enough people to obviously have an impact on the values of properties because of the short supply of stock. So we've got this transfer of wealth from there's no real confidence in small business or to set up a small business for that matter, and yet to go out and spend more into your small business enterprise because there's the government haven't really put the right measures in place to protect the small business operators, the SMEs, to really have any confidence. And that's as the AFR brings it out in their article as well today, the future of the economy or a positive economic uplift is going to be determined by the confidence with the small business operators. And I don't think there's a lot of confidence out there. JobKeeper is obviously going to be pulled back at the end of this month, and we're going to see what's going to happen with the SMEs. Now, all that and the as I said, the transfer of money from one asset class to another, predominantly property now, has given a lot of people that confidence to say, you know what, I've made a hell of a lot of money in shares on Bitcoin. I'll pay over the odds. And I was, I mean, just looking at it firsthand on the ground, it's absolutely astonishing. We attended at the first auction that we attended for our client, one of our clients on Saturday. We didn't even get a chance to put a bid in. The first bid was already $100,000 above an official bank valuation that we got, Martin. And the property ended up being sold for $206,000 above the highest bank valuation that we were able to achieve to give our buyer confidence to bid up to a certain point. Because obviously, regardless of the fact that, you know, they've got a 20% deposit, they've also got to stump up for the stamp duty and every other cost. So they didn't have any more money if it above a certain point when you do all the maths and you work it all out. Now, beyond that official valuation, we had a little bit of wiggle room, but not $206,000. But yet the two parties that bidded were going hell for leather, and they were confident. It, you know, like it was. So the one of our friends there that spoke to one of them, said that it was simply that they were just basically transferring money in one asset class to another, and therefore to them, whether it did value lower or what they bought it for, they weren't particularly care. They were more concerned about security and longevity with homes. And given the fact that the numbers of homes that are listed on the market, good homes that are listed, are very low, it just adds to this pressure that a lot of first-time buyers are feeling and are going to continue to feel.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand that if you're in that mindset, then your valuation perception filter will be very different, right? So whereas you and I would argue that there is a fundamental value above which it makes no sense to continue a transaction because you're going to not make, you know, the returns that you need. And as we've always said, it's important to buy the right price on the way in because it's much harder to make it on the way out. But if there are people who are saying, well, actually, my perception filter is very different and I'm just about security, I don't mind paying, you know, 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 over the odds, because for me, that's not important. You can't actually compete directly with that type of purchaser, just as you can't compete with somebody who's thinking about buying a property to redevelop and put four units on instead, because their economics and their perception filter will be totally different. And one of the things I say to people quite often through my one-to-ones is, you've got to understand that. You've got to understand that people are going to be coming with a completely different set of perceptions and values that you may have. And if you're not basing your transaction decisions on the same basis as other people's, you could end up with a different answer.
That's right. Look, in other suburbs, as we've spoken, Martin, we've got the consolidation of multiple family wealth, families' wealth, and they're consolidating. Like you've got two young professionals. They're being sitting on a decent pool of money that they've saved up for the current careers that they've had for the last 10 years. They've made some investments in property. They've the in-laws on the one hand are also giving them a very handsome a monetary gift to go towards the property, and they're inviting the other side of in-laws to sell their properties, all the properties that they're basically, you know, in good suburbs, but that requires a lot of renovation work, and they're inviting them to live with the children, so that with them, so that they can consolidate, three sites or three lots of pools of funds, and they're buying well-built, well-presented homes, and again they're paying more because of their needs are different to what single families that would typically buy a home would be paying, because again, their disposition is a lot different to the other party, and they're also, and in the culturally, they also look for those homes that have got the capacity or to be able to accommodate the in-laws, or as they say, those retreats, in-law retreats, or so that they can be looked after, because in their culturally, nursing home is far from their thought, but it also consolidates their wealth. So you can't compete with that. You can't go toe to toe with certain cultures where when you've got this happening and you're only either one or a two income family and conservative, because at the end of the day, it's not just the incomes that you're achieving or the 10 or 20% or even 25% deposit that you may have on hand. You're competing with two generations effectively of wealth that are coming in, and so all you're doing is just stoking the market, and just if you chase them, as you say, Martin, whether it be a developer or whether it be this type of scenario or somebody that's transferring the wealth from one asset class to another, by chasing them, thinking that you could beat them, all you're doing is just raising the prices, and you get getting caught up in the emotion. You've got to have your breakpoints. You've got to have your pull away mark. You've got to have that, and that can only be done if you have an understanding of the land value, an understanding of the facility or the construction that's the building that's on there, what it would cost to replace it, what the inclusions are, and if you've got mortgage brokers alongside of you that can get you those official valuations to make sure that you're protected. And even though you did pay a little bit more for the from an emotional point of view, you don't get stunk, because if you're forced to exchange contracts with a no cooling off, a 66W certificate, and guess what? You've done your 10%. And if the property is valued $2 million plus, well, you got $200,000 that's riding on a bank valuation. If you haven't done all your checks and balances, you could be you could be in a lot of pain, because you can't come up with a balance, or if you do, you're going to have to you're going to be borrowing the difference at a very high rate through your credit cards or any other means, or through loan sharks, as many have done in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no doubt in my mind that people repent at their leisure on this sort of stuff. And what's fascinating about some of this is that going back to our show last week, and the show I made with regard to the psychology of auctions, people can get really caught up, right? Which is why you have to do your homework, and you have to know where the limit is, and be firm on it. I can't really underscore that more than we have already. Now, let's go on to talk about timber in more detail, because this is a really important breaking news story, because we know that there is a massive amount of building construction, scheduled, thanks for Home Builder and everything else, right? But a lot of the materials comes from overseas, and the China connection seems to be going off the boil.
Well, it's, as we've said on previous shows, in previous months, Martin, is that our friends are going to make an example of us, and there's no love lost between the two leaders, and because one's taken it to heart personally, is going to really the rest of us are going to suffer for it. And at the moment, what's happened? I got some news last night about the China rejecting our timber exports. Our logs that get sent over to China in order to be processed, and then we buy it back, different forms and in different forms and shapes in order to use in the construction industry. Well, that's certainly broken. America is not getting much from Canada, so therefore America have tapped into the supply chain of timber from China, and we've just been outbid. So because of this, and our dealings, our team's dealings with some big builders in regional areas. One of a couple of big builders, one particular builder that has 40 projects lined up, has just gone out and has literally bought every toothpick, every piece of timber from Bunnings regional centres in New South Wales as of today. And that's breaking news because they feel, and they've been told through their channels, they also have friends and relatives over in America, they've been told through their channels that come the end of next month, we're going to be, timber's going to basically come to, no supply. This is going to put a lot of pressure on people that have bought land and haven't secured a fixed price contract on the construction, or haven't really secured a building contract. It's going to be another mess that the government has not been prepared for, because again, we don't refine it. Most of our raw materials here in Australia anymore. So where that's going to go, it's going to be very, very interesting, Martin.
Yeah, absolutely. And rule of thumb estimate would suggest that construction costs could be 15 to 30% higher because of this. And of course, we've also got the issue of lack of builders. And in fact, I've seen a number of communications recently where the hourly rate or the day rate for construction has gone through the roof. So suddenly the price of building that new home has gone, 50%, 6% higher than where it was. Now, if you haven't got a fixed price contract, you're going to incur huge amounts of additional costs.
That's correct. And also the other question is how many of those projects aren't even going to get started? And how long are people going to be waiting? Then leads back onto the supply or the listings on market. It has a great potential to put further downward pressure on listings on market, on home listings on market, that is, and people aren't going to be as motivated to put properties on the market, which is going to put a huge amount of pressure, more pressure on selling agents and offices that are operating that are relying on selling property, that, in other words, real estate offices that don't have rent rolls, which is perhaps this is a good time to insert the talk I had with one of the agents that's been working out in the West for the last 30 years, Martin.
Yeah, well, we'll do that, Edwin. It's worth saying that this was actually recorded with his permission, we have deliberately not shown his face. But it's a really frank disclosure about what it's like on the ground. So let's play this clip, shall we?
Not about the prices that are being achieved at auctions, particularly in the West, as we're sitting in the West here. And just to tell us a little bit of your insights as to what do you feel is happening at the market, particularly with the low listing numbers. What's happening with the industry?
Well, it definitely is a drought out there when it comes to listings. There's many agencies that haven't really even gotten a listing in the past 3 months, especially leading up to Christmas. And
so
just
how
after
do you
Christmas.
Survive? How do you survive if you're not listing? And as you and I know, being in the industry about 30 years, How have agents been surviving all this time?
Well, a lot have to cut costs. A lot have to also lay off its staff, because if they're not bringing in listings in, there's no cash flow coming into the business. It's really our lifeblood at the moment. And if we're not achieving anywhere near the stock levels that we did about a year or two ago, it's going to have dire consequences on the agency. And at the moment, we're seeing high prices as a result of that. There's a high buyer demand, but there's a low stock levels, which is causing that supply-demand imbalance, pushing the prices up. Now, reasons for that, who knows? It could be a lot of owners are waiting to see where it peaks off and where it reaches before they start putting their properties on the market, realising, yep, now it's time to jump in. But whether an agency can wait for that, who knows?
What about the effect of the
pulling back of JobKeeper. How's that? How do you feel that's going to affect a lot of real estate offices in the West?
Oh, it's going to have definitely an effect on them. It'll have a lot of pressure. Again, financial pressures on the agency. It's going to be like a two-fronted storm, really. They're going to have storms from the west and basically from the east. So, you know, at one stage, you're not having cash flow money coming in because of a lack of sales. And secondly, the safety net's going to be pulled from underneath them. So they're probably going to be put in a position where they're either going to cut back costs in advertising or staff.
Wow. Well, you know, you can't say more clearly than that. It's a big deal, isn't it?
It is, Martin, and this is what I said. A number of industries have been impacted by this pandemic and by the non-return to the great days where the hospitality industry had, the tourism industry had, retail in many accounts, but. One of the industries that I say is my own industry that hasn't been really discussed, and it's just a wait and see. I'm a believer that there's going to be at least 40% attrition in selling agents because it's just unsustainable. And if agents want to continue to work in the industry, they're going to be working on a part-time basis or run two jobs, try to on a commission base, because offices will just won't be able to afford them. But the other conundrum in that scenario, Martin, is the fact that the industry regulations have changed so much that unless you can prove that an agent can earn above the award, which is relatively not a lot when you come to think about it, the award's about $65,000 a year, but they've got to prove that they can earn that and more by way of commission. And if they're not getting any listings for 3 months or getting one listing every other month, it's unsustainable. It really, really is unsustainable because the marketing costs, advertising, promotion, the ancillary stuff, it's just astronomical what it costs to run an office. And if there's going to be less listings on the market, then obviously there's going to be less incomes earned, less commissions earned, which means less to take home at the end of the week, at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I would like to propose, in the same mode of engagement as the government did for the holiday, tourism and airline industry, that what they should do is to offer to pay 50% of auction fees and advertising fees, right, for all properties, but only in certain locations. So let's pick Mandra, Wollongong, mid-North Coast, and somewhere, west of Brisbane. I don't know. I mean, something like that, right? That's going to solve it, isn't it?
Oh, just throw in the trifecta, man. Throw in the Sputnik 5, one of the other two vaccines. We can dream. Let the government so willing to do everything. It's funny, Martin. We take the mickey out of the government, what they do. But you and I were discussing about, I think it was 18 months ago, maybe more. We were talking about how the infrastructure was put in place back then to all roads lead to Sydney, and it's more apparent now. It's almost all this crap that we've been going through, it's almost like they knew, and really they're protecting the central parts, or where the politicians mainly live and where the bureaucrats mainly live, which they've been protecting that because all the infrastructure leads to the main road infrastructure and transport infrastructure leads to Sydney. But if they really want to do something about what's happening, start setting up some real infrastructure outside so that we can go further out, and so that not only, I'm sure, I know a lot of young people that have said to me that they would be happy to to go further afield. They would be happy to go and live over the mountains, but the jobs that they do, the industries that they're involved with, they can't work from home. They can't, you know, it's not, you know, they're not into IT. They're not into service industries where it doesn't require them to go into, you know, into an office. They have to have that face-to-face. They have to travel to work. And if those jobs can't be found in the regional areas, well then, albeit the fact that the regional areas are have been, you know, going up in values because people have been taking advantage of that, but you know, a lot more could have been done. We could have been a lot more prepared if these bloody politicians, you know, got things started. Not only 10 years ago, but if they did shit, you know, 20, 30 years ago, Martin.
Well, I agree with that, but there's this thing called pork barreling, right? Which basically says what you do is you spend the money in the particular areas that align to your interests or align to the next election, et cetera, et cetera. And I can point to so many examples of pork barreling. In fact, the latest examples of, you know, the airline half price tickets and where they actually ended up. Well, funnily enough, you know, there was a logic to it. And of course, they're trying to retrofit a whole set of explanations to do with, well, you know, that's where international tourists would have gone previously. But you can see quite clearly the fact that it is something else going on. And in fact, you know, Gladys Berejiklian actually said some time ago that pork barreling was all good sport. It was part of the political process. So it is institutionalized, which means that it's not equality. It's not based on need. It's based on pork.
Yeah, well, that's right. And look, brown paper bags were also institutionalized until we had to start using reusable bags, and some polis started using Aldi reusable bags. So go figure. Yeah, we go from brown paper bags to other forms of bags, but it's still the same shit. It's still corruption. It's still greasing the palm of those that have helped you to get into that lifelong political job. With a great retirement plan and security. In the meantime, everybody else has to pay $4.99 for a kilo of carrots. Yeah, I'm sure. I reckon they'd probably get the carrots for free, man.
Well, it is interesting, Edwin, because you know when I was a young upstart, right? I had this basic sort of theory that you know the world works based on fairness. The world works based on you know effort. And all of those things. And as I've got older and grayer and more cynical, I've started to realize that, well, you know, there's a bit of that. Most of it's something completely different, which is about who you know, what your connections are, who you're aligned to, where the money flows. And I actually say to people now, follow the money, because actually, if you follow the money, you'll probably understand much more about what's really going on.
Exactly right. You and I, we've said all along, and we've tried as much as you and I get bagged on different forms of media that we've been, you know, we're doomsayers or we're this or we're that. We're just putting it out there. We're not telling the people don't buy. We're just telling the people buy, but make a conscious decision, and avoid a lot of future pain. If you can avoid it, why not? Dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's before you sign these contracts, and take as much emotion out. You won't take everything out of the transaction, but take as much of it out. Going back to the property that I spoke to the first property that we participated on Saturday. Look. 2 months ago, there was only two listings in that particular suburb, but now there's up to Saturday, there were six listings in that suburb. At the end of the day, our client, is choosing to be, has a choice of because of his income, has a choice that he can make, and he likes this one above the other listings that are there. So we try to give it a go, but lo and behold, others also like this property for the same reasons. And that's what's happening. But in terms of in in terms of not doing all your checks and balances, not doing all your due diligence, and jumping in with the crowd, I think it's only you're only going to encounter a lot more pain later on. You could say that, yeah, but I got in the market, but what's it going to cost? What's it going to cost you with that the $200,000 that you think you made on the property that you bought for $1.8 million and you think you made on the property because the mainstream media is telling you the property values have gone up, that $200,000 could end up being pittance when it comes to the $350,000 of rectification work that you've just realized you have to do to the property because when you bought it, all these structural issues weren't disclosed in the building and pest reports. I think that's what we're saying, Martin, on the one hand.
Well, I agree, Edwin. Yeah, well, we just simply say, you know, make sure that you do the work, etc., etc. In fact, I recorded a really interesting interview today with Amanda Farmer, who's a lawyer looking specifically at strata title issues, right? And that show will come up in a couple of days. But I was astonished at how little people actually look at the strata arrangements and the agreements and the fees and all those sorts of things. Now, I would have thought that's another critical area to look at if you're going to buy high rise or low rise on a strata development. You've got to ask some serious questions about the strata arrangements.
Well, you do, and this is where, look, I'm not saying I'm an expert on that because when there is a good friend of mine, Paul Mulligan. He's if you're going to buy into a strata block, I'd work with him on making sure because he knows the ins and outs of just about every owner's corporation in the eastern suburbs and in the city, because he's been doing that specific job for many years, for close to two decades, and that's what he specialised in. So you've got to reach out to specialists in these areas. Your solicitors aren't going to go through a 200-300 page report when they're only charging you $2,500 on a conveyance. Let me tell you that. Yep. So you pay people that are experienced, and there was a report I think just over the weekend or came out this morning or came out yesterday with another tower in Auburn or in Lidcombe that is basically that they've achieved the OC, the occupation certificate, they've been granted that, but now the building's basically got to be shut down because the rectification work that's got to be done to it. It shouldn't have been approved in the first instance. I mean, we're going to get more and more of this, Martin, over time. The unfortunate thing is, as freestanding homes are going to be highly desirable, and there's less people going to be selling them as we move into as we go through these issues with the supply chains of the timber and steel, and there's going to be less property on the market. People are going to be more reluctant to sell. They're going to be thinking twice because if they're going to be particularly selling and to buy something new because they're living in a 40, 50, 60-year-old home or they have to downsize to, they can't live in a two-story or in a steep area, for all these reasons. So if freestanding homes are going to be, less available for people to buy, there's going to be a shift. We will see a shift into apartment living again. And again, because we've talked about the vaccines and the rolling out of vaccine and the control of these pandemics and hopefully future controls of future pandemics as well. People are going to have no choice but to go back to look at the high rise, but we're only going to be going back, or buyers are going to be going back into, as they say, from the frying pan into the fire. They're going to think they're going to jump in because they're going to get something cheap, but if they don't do the checks and balances once again, they're going to be paying, but perhaps not as much as they would on a structural issue of a freestanding dwelling. But if the whole building, if it has a structural issue, if it's not just cosmetic or if it's not just things that could be rectified, where the owners' corporations are going to be raising special levies of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 per unit. But if it's a structurally unsound, as Mascot Towers and Opal Towers and every other tower that's about to fall down, well, you know, you're going to be without a home. So it's issues that the government have just not controlled, because, as you said, because of this pork barreling, because of the brown paper bags, because of the greasing over not years but over the last three decades.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, Edwin. And, you know, there was an article over the weekend showing, I think, 10 places where the local authorities in New South Wales have now said, you've got to fix these up before you can actually let them be complete. I'll put the link. It just shows how widespread these issues are, and the bad construction and the bad certification, et cetera, is rife, and it will continue. Now let's just close out tonight, because there was a really interesting article, right, claiming, well, I'll give you the headline: Sydney auctions, family blown away after getting nearly $500,000 over the reserve. Yay, the market's alive and well. Except, Edwin, we know different, right?
Yeah, look, I know the area, I know, I've actually, you know, been involved in selling property in the area in years gone by. Look, Mike, what I can say is, with regard to this article, a couple of things really stood out, and one of them was the fact that a lot of these mainstream media articles that talk about all this chest beating, they're no longer publishing the actual address of the property they're referring to. They're just trying to refer as much as possible to numbers. But when you do a little bit of digging and you know the particularly if you know the areas, you get to understand what's really happening. Now, first of all, this agent should be locked up. It should seriously be locked up, and the reporter should follow up on a different story. There is another side to it, because development sites. This was what we would say 9.9 out of 10. This was a duplex site, right? So and duplex sites on the same street almost 12 months ago, we're selling for between 1.3 to 1.35, 1,300,000 to 1,350,000. So if you do the math, working backwards from the chest beating of the 500,000 above the reserve, that tells me that the reserve on the property that was sold was 1,288,000, right? So if 12 months ago, when the market for developers, or the appetite for developers to buy land or buy duplex sites or buy development sites to build, was really low. It was really low because there was a lot of uncertainty with these lockdowns. So there wasn't a lot of appetite. But yet, at that time, they were being sold for 1.3, 1.35. So where the hell does this agent get the reserve, or place a reserve, get the owners to put a reserve of 1.28 or 1.3, right? Which also means that the guide was probably below that. I don't know what the guide was. I haven't done any more research on asking other colleagues in the area to see if they knew what he was guiding, but I could imagine it would have been about $150,000 below the reserve anyway. So that puts out a lot of questions, sends out a lot of bad karma out there. So you've got this situation, Martin. So now we are where we are, and builders and developers a lot more confident. So they're going to pay above the odds. They're happy to pay above the odds because they've got, as you said earlier on in the podcast, in the show, you said earlier on with, their appetite is different. Their motivation is different. So I've added an extra from the 1.3, the level values achieved almost 12 months ago for duplex sites. I've added on another 150 per site, which would have been conservative for developers to throw at getting this land, this block of land to build a duplex, right? So that means that add another 300,000. So there's your 1.6. Now, it sold for 1.68, you know, if my memory serves me right. So where's all the hype? Where's, you know, these are the figures that you don't get told about. And this is what drives the price values of other properties that aren't duplex sites, that aren't anywhere near the value of this. But and that's only on the surface, Mud. Now, I could go on about the fact that this block of land, when I did the background search on this block of land, it was actually anywhere from 50 to 68 square meters bigger than the blocks of land that were being sold as duplex sites in the area almost 12 months ago. So there's value to that. Why is the value to, although it's only 30 square meters or 25 square meters on each block? Because it affects the floor space ratios. It affects the building space. It affects the, you know, whether or not you could build a three bedroom plus study, or whether or not you're allowed to build a four bedroom duplex, which obviously is going to get you $100,000 to $150,000 more by the simple fact that it's not a study. It's an actual bedroom, a decent sized bedroom, as opposed to a study. So all these things come into play, but they don't tell you that. The reporters, these would-be property reporters, don't tell you that. Yes, the market is very active, is very buoyant when it comes to, you know, to achieving a sale, because you've got developers and builders that are also fighting to maintain the trades for a job, effectively. So, you know, anyway, that's just my frustrated rant on this article.
Right, but two takeouts from me, Edwin. The first is there is actually a logic to the value, right? You built it up. So, you know, you could actually make comparisons and you could build it up and you could see how it could get to that sort of price, right? First point. Second point is you've still got this underquoting phenomenon, which we've touched on many, many times, and this is another example of it, right? But the stupid reporting of, you know, a huge overreach compared with the auction asking price just tells you absolutely nothing at all. It just, you know, it's just wallpaper. It's not worth anything. And the trouble is, of course, it actually makes people less clear rather than more clear about what's going on in the property market. And that's a problem because, of course, every time the media sprout this stuff, you know, there are so it's going to stick, isn't it, for some people. And some people are going to say, oh, that's so fine, I should pay a lot more then. But again, it comes back to our fundamental point, which we have to keep saying because it's so critical, is do the work, do the calculations, don't overpay. And that will actually put you in much better stead down the track.
That's right. And look, I really can't wait until the regulators really get us. I'm sure they're looking at this. I'm sure they're looking at these sort of these stories and what's going on out there. And sooner than later, we will be hearing how they're going to come down. But unfortunately, it's an unfortunate side of the industry that they're undermanned, understaffed, under-resourced to check on the shenanigans that's playing out. But it's interesting how on my Twitter account, it's not until you get reporters chime into some of these tweets that we put up there. It's not until the reporters themselves, or these would-be property reporters, feel the pinch or feel the effect of underquoting themselves that they begin to talk about it. This is it's not a strange world. It's until it affects them personally, because they're trying to buy. You know, they won't talk about the real issues. We talk about other issues and chest beating, but they obviously don't want to get the agents offside.
No, well, it's called the machinery of disinformation. It's everywhere, right? So the only way to counteract it is to go granular, do the analysis, do the work, and know where you really stand. And, you know, we can't say it enough times, Edwin, because it's so, so critical, particularly at the moment, for all the reasons we've been discussing.
It's been a good time. I think, We talked about the briefly touched on the AFR article with regards to the small business confidence.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the key elements that we need to look at moving forward. And I just want to say to our followers that is, again, look at buying with an upside. We need to cut out as much emotion as possible. You're going to buy with an upside and buy well researched. But with our buyers, as frustrated as they're getting, as frustrating as it can be, we're able to see the pitfalls. But then again, Martin, if people are willing to throw money at something, why chase it? Why chase it? You're not going to win anyway. When all you're doing is just inflating the values for the next person or even for yourself to get something more decent. You know, if people would only learn to just set that bar and sit firm, it would be a different marketplace. But let's wait and see what happens with JobKeeper and all these stimulus that have been going on, how they get rolled back. Ronald says, the only business confidence stands in the way of a strong recovery, and I think that's pretty much the mood for what's going to happen in the next few months, because I particularly personally don't believe that small businesses are that confident and a lot's yet to unravel.
Yeah, and I'll just add three words: selective perception filters. There we go. It's a new technical term to define the fact that people will come to an auction or indeed other buying situation with different ideas because they've got different drivers. And that's something which I think people should understand, because not everybody is motivated the same way.
No, and other people have different needs, and they'll pay different values. Some people are apt to buying something that's more shabby than the other property down the road, because they feel comfortable with putting in a bit of elbow grease and spit and span and getting up to speed. But others just want the shiny finished property. So you've really got to look at every single aspect of it and account for it, because with so much uncertainty that's yet to play and continues to play out, all the what ifs are resounding and are becoming louder. What if interest rates do start to rise? What if banks do start to raise rates independent of the RBA? What if, but more importantly, not what if, but what when the cost of living rises enough to equal to a two rate hike of 25 basis point? Because I'm just seeing it all around me. The cost of living, oil's only going to get, I think Lindsay said that oil's going to get stronger, and those costs are going to be passed on, Martin. So it's a wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think with all of these things, we'll have to keep watching the signs, and we'll come back and talk about it week by week, Edwin. Appreciate your time tonight. As always, that's some really important advice there for people. And we'll do it all again next week, I guess.
Yeah, next time, give me some bloody warning, will you? Looking at Luke Christopher with a beard, I thought for a minute that you had Joy's big older brother or something. I was a little bit too scared to chime in on the live chat, man.
Oh, what do you mean, Mr. SQM Research, right? Yes, I'm sorry about that, but I loved your quote anyway. It was good. So we'll put a link to the show with Louis Christopher. That was a really, really insightful show last Tuesday. If anybody wants to really understand what the property processes are with regard to the data, he's a really good go-to guy. So I recommend watching that show if you've not seen it. See you next week, Edwin.
Looking forward to it, Martin. Take care.
See ya. Bye.